Greetings, everybody. Welcome. Welcome, welcome. Good to be together on this January 6th. Good to be together for this attunement service where we ourselves tune up. We attune among us, coming closer together in spirit, and we bring attunement to our world. We radiate attunement to our world in this time. Just a word about these Wednesday evening services. The services team at Sunrise went through a process of assigning, well, I think it's every Wednesday in this year, to a team of two of us on a rotating basis. So we'll send that list out. I'll send it out shortly. And if you want to contribute something to a given service, you'll know who to go to. So you'll have that. We have a new address through Becoming a Son programs. So you're here, so somehow you figured it out. If you know anybody who's having difficulty, we're happy to give them a hand. Today, in our nation's capital in America, there were horrific events. I imagine many of you are aware of that and that perhaps some aren't. I'll recap briefly what the events are. There is a process that the Congress goes through, which is typically almost perfunctory. It's a process in electing the president in which they receive the electoral college votes from the states. Their job is pretty much literally to receive them and count them. The question of the voting process is really in our Constitution left up to the states, not up to the Congress. Their sole job is to make sure they got what the states gave them and then to count them. However, more was made out of that than what I just described by the president and others. And the president incited various groups, including the Proud Boys, to gather in Washington. He addressed them nearby on a bandstand and incited them to march on the Capitol building. They stormed the Capitol building. Some of the legislators locked themselves behind doors, hid under their desks. Ultimately, they were evacuated. Apparently, there's one woman who was shot to death in the process. There was vandalism done to the building as it was completely taken over at one point by this mob. Eventually, they were expelled. The mob was expelled. The city declared a curfew, so no one was allowed to be out. And the Capitol Police brought in reinforcements from various places, so they got very substantially reinforced. The legislature, both the Senate and the Congress, decided to reconvene and carry on their business. And they're doing that now. We can wonder how far all of this might go, but it went that far. It's being called a terrorist act, and I think fairly so. Those people in that building feared for their lives. So we're not here to be political, so this isn't a... That might be fun sometime, but this is not a political night. We're not here to pick sides, parties, anything like that. And yet there's something happening that's bigger than politics, at least as bigger than democratic politics as we understand it. And it's what I believe we're looking at is the threat of tyranny and a tyrant who is, as people are saying, is it attempted a coup of the government? You could question how likely it was to be successful, but nonetheless, it was attempted. You could question the seriousness of the attempt. That's kind of hard to assess. But nonetheless, you know, the old saying goes, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck. So, well, the two people on the list for tonight from your services team are Jane and me. So Jane and I are hosting this time. And we thought it would be good to use the hour to simply honor and love our country, honor and love the essence and dream of America, to reflect on where we're at and then reflect on our future. So you might say it was a dramatic day. And we're not here to be dramatic tonight. We're here to bring attunement, bring the love, the power, the light of attunement into the situation, to be the attunement angel for the world in this thing. So you up for doing that? Yeah? Even you Canadians? Thank you, our friends from the north. Thank you for being with us in this. Right. So what we would like to do next is touch on some historical things. And I think we have three historical references to touch on, to simply touch the essence and the heart and the dream of America. As it happens, these involve three men, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Martin Luther King. In each case, no doubt not perfect men. So when we look at history, we're not looking for perfection, but we are looking for the essence of something that came through people, that brought the lineage of humankind forward and brought it into this day. For those of us in America, in grammar school, I imagine we all remember being told about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. And then these days, not when I so much when I was in school, but these days I'm sure Martin Luther King too. I've been amazed and just so appreciative of looking more deeply into the history of America and learning more about some of the people who were leading lights in our history. Like I say, not by no means perfect people, but George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, who we look to as perhaps two of our greatest presidents, were men of such stature and character. It's like they were all that, you know, all that we were told that they were in elementary school, like they were that and more. Just amazing. George Washington, you know, at Valley Forge, just breaks my heart just to think of what he did at Valley Forge, just being with the troops and keeping the morale up and seeing the thing through. Amazing. What I would like to reflect on with you is something that happened right at the end of the war. And you may have some awareness of this, but I want to first read from an article from Time magazine that was published in November of 2018. It says this: America owes more than we like to admit to the fact that George Washington was our first president. Called back from retirement, first to chair the Constitutional Convention, and then to serve as the first president, Washington could easily have held the office for life. Indeed, Alexander Hamilton argued for the presidency as a lifetime office, with its occupant removable only by impeachment. John Adams went even further, advocating for the president to be addressed as His Majesty. Washington himself had no desire for absolute power, but he was concerned that future presidents might not have his scruples. Seeing that even his own wise compatriots, having thrown off the English king at great cost, were prepared just 5 years later to hand sovereignty to a new monarch, and a foreign one at that. That's a story in and of itself. He took the unusual and selfless act of setting a precedent by leaving the presidency after 8 years. If our first president had been Donald Trump, or even Franklin Roosevelt, who broke tradition to serve 4 terms, it is not hard to imagine the presidency becoming something much more ominous and less constrained than it is today. When Washington had retired to his farm at the end of the war, King George III, remarked it made him the greatest man in the world. So in 1782, Washington was approached about being king by a Louis Nicola, and he wrote to him, and here was Washington's response. "Sir, with a mixture of great surprise and astonishment, I have read with attention the sentiments you have submitted to my perusal. Be assured, sir, no occurrence in the course of the war has given me more painful sensations than your information of there being such ideas existing in the army as you have expressed. And I must view with abhorrence and reprehend with severity, for the present, the communication of them will rest in my bosom, unless some further agitation of the matter shall make a disclosure necessary. I am much at a loss to conceive what part of my conduct could have given encouragement to an address which to me seems big with the greatest mischiefs that can befall my country. If I am not deceived in the knowledge of myself, you could not have found a person to whom your schemes were more disagreeable. At the same time, in justice to my own feeling, I must add that no man possesses a more sincere wish to see ample justice done to the army than I do." That was about them getting paid, by the way. "And as far as my powers and influence in a constitutional way extend, they shall be employed to the utmost of my abilities to effect it, should there be any occasion. Let me conjure you, then, if you have any regard for your country, concern for yourself or posterity, or respect for me, to banish these thoughts from your mind and never communicate as from yourself or anyone else a sentiment of the like nature. With esteem, I am, sir, your most obedient servant." It's character. Character. He was a man of character, and he set a pattern for this country, which was that this country doesn't serve its leaders, but its leaders serve this country. So we're going to go on to Abraham Lincoln. He opposed slavery. And when the Southern states seceded from the Union, from the country, because they didn't get their way over slavery, he wouldn't have it. And he committed this country to a hideous war. And if you read the history, it's clear, it seems to me anyway, that at times he was virtually all alone in seeing that through, until he met up with Ulysses S. Grant. And he had terrible, what they call melancholy. We now call it depression. Not surprising when you consider how the weight of the world was on his shoulders. And yet he carried through anyway, with utmost humility and determination. Like he couldn't have found a better man for the hour. It's amazing. So Jane is offered to read what is famous, but nonetheless heart-touchingly beautiful, the Gettysburg Address. The story goes that he was supposed to speak for much longer, but the blowhard who spoke in front of him went on for something like an hour and a half. And so he just made it short and sweet. No one took too much note of it until sometime later when someone realized just the simple profundity of what he had said. So, Jane, we'd love to hear that from you.
Thanks for the introduction, David. These are words from November 19th, 1863. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it, far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. I'd like to read some other words. These words were spoken by Martin Luther King, but they were quoted just this morning, I believe, by Reverend Raphael Warnock, who was just elected to the Senate from the state of Georgia. He actually is a preacher in the church where Martin Luther King used to be a preacher in Georgia. And it was in the midst of what's going on in our country today that he read this excerpt from Letters from the Birmingham Jail, which was written by Martin Luther King. In a real sense, all life is interrelated. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. So, brilliant words of the attunement current spoken by Martin Luther King about the oneness and the uniqueness of what we have to do together. David has a video he'd like to share. Do you want to introduce it, David, or shall I just say it? Go ahead.
Yeah, let me introduce it. So we have a beautiful music video of America the Beautiful, and it's got lyrics on it so that we can sing on along if we like. So just seems like a wonderful thing to do. You know, looking at history, we can look at the past and we can find fault And yet we have to understand that we're looking through the window of a different cultural milieu than the people at the time. And that forget that, like us, they were in a process of evolution. And there's a line in this beautiful song that it seems to me refers to that. It says, "Till all success be nobleness," acknowledging that over the course of history, as we're fulfilling our destiny, there's a refining that goes on, an evolution that goes on. And we can appreciate the seeds of truth in the past, acknowledging the lack of perfection, if you will, but nonetheless find the lineage that we're a part of and take that lineage forward. So that's some of what it implies to me. But the song, anyway, is beautiful. It was written on the top of, being at the top of Pikes Peak here in Colorado. And having just been there recently, I can imagine what she saw that inspired her so much. So here's the song. Oh, yeah. That's a good recording, isn't it? Wow. I think they must have had several different choruses doing that.
I don't think the line nobleness was in there, though. It's in the next verse.
Oh, they might have skipped that one. Okay.
So we are going to go into an interactive part of our service now. As in the song, it speaks of God mend thine every flaw. We acknowledge that the United States of America is not perfect. It is not not without challenges and things that still need to evolve and emerge in the current day. So we have a chance to write in the chat after, you know, acknowledging our flaws and knowing that we have those things. What do you love about America? And as you write these things in, I will read them. Great vision and possibility. The beautiful diversity love its people and its open heart, the large and beautiful heart, the land itself. We try. The diversity of the natural world, the strength and variety of her people, good intentions, the land of opportunity, media that are free to report the facts, the freedom and the principles on which we stand, democracy. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. Respect for pluralism as unity. Freedom of speech, religion, and assembly, right to pursue happiness, freedom and democracy, the aspiration of freedom and justice of all. So much beauty, the brave-heartedness of the pioneers which discovered the landscape, the melting pot of creation, the vision of truth, freedom to choose your destiny, diversity, beautiful, unique regions and peoples, the place where people come to pursue happiness from all over the world, the lineage of great courageous leaders, her large heart, the America that welcomes all into the melting pot of oneness.
Well, thanks everyone for contributing. Beautiful name, isn't it, America? Apparently named after an Italian, America Vespucci, I think is his last name, who came into New York Harbor under the what is now the Verrazano Bridge. And so somehow we got named after him. But a beautiful, beautiful name. We'd like to go on to consider something of tyranny and freedom. Tyranny and freedom. I wrote both on Facebook and also on Becoming a Son programs about the events of today, essentially saying tyrants are tyrants are tyrants, and saying that the current situation that we have is larger than democratic politics as usual. It's larger than red and blue, Republican and Democrat, conservative and liberal. It's bigger than that. What's at stake here is tyranny. So tyranny, an authoritarian rulership, a rulership that serves the rulers instead of the people. That statement from the Gettysburg Address addresses that. How does it go? Government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And from a spiritual standpoint, we might say there's an inherent limitation in that because our government isn't just for us. It's for the larger world in which we live, for the benefit of the whole. So there's some inherent limitations in that, but still, it's a statement that this is a place of freedom. America is a place of freedom. It's not a place of tyranny. I named some of the tyrants that we're familiar with from down through the ages. Of course, the story of Moses and the Hebrew people in Egypt is a story of tyranny. You had a tyrant Pharaoh, and it was a story of freedom, of liberation, deciding that that wasn't the right government for them as a people, that they were not on earth to be governed by a tyrant, but they were on earth to be governed by God. Another example is Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, who commanded that people fall down and worship his image. And the Jews at the time faced that, wouldn't put up with it. And there's more modern tyrants that we're familiar with, from Mussolini to Hitler to Stalin, Saddam Hussein. In the end, when you look at it, there's a repetitive, identifiable pattern. It's just tyranny. That's all. It's just a tyrant. They lie, they steal, they cheat. They command that people fall down and worship them. They engorge their own pockets, their own wealth at the expense of people. And all, the patterns are just pathetically identifiable and repeating. In some cases, there are millions of deaths that follow. I got curious about that and looked it up. Looked at of the tyrants over the ages, who killed the most? I think who are responsible for the most deaths? Stalin's right up there. Hitler's right up there. Chairman Mao's right up there. You know, millions and millions and millions of deaths. Well, the tyrant in the White House, more as a sin of omission than commission, is responsible for deaths. So he hasn't risen to the level of slaughtering people. So what do we do about all of that? Like, where are we in all that? And it's easy to take freedom for granted. You know, it ultimately came down to it in this country in 1776, and they just said, that's enough. It's like it got to a point where it's worth fighting for. And, you know, we're not, as I look at everybody here tonight, we're not a warlike group. So we're not inclined to go to war, but nonetheless, do we raise our voices? You know, if everyone raises their voices, if we keep shining the light, stay conscious, that makes a huge difference in the world and makes it hard for tyranny to triumph. And I do celebrate all those who are speaking out today. You can read from them, you can see them on the news, speaking about the tyranny in the country. And I'll take the man that Jane referenced, Raphael Warnock, Reverend Raphael Warnock, who now is Senator. What is he, Senator Reverend, I guess. But if you listen to him, he's simply straightforward. He's full of light. He doesn't get distracted. He's not reactive. And if you look on the man's face, it's a face of love. There's a character of love there. And he's speaking up and he's committing his life to serve this country and serve the people of this country. So we can deplore tyranny, but then we can recognize heroism when we see it. We can recognize character and uplift it. And again, we're not claiming perfection for anybody. I don't know if any of you saw the cabinet members and other staff that President-elect Biden has nominated. Again, we're not having a political evening here. We're having an attunement evening. This isn't a political statement. And I'm not ascribing perfection to President-elect Biden or any of the ones that he nominated. But you listen to these people, and my heart just sailed. It's like, wow, these are really noble people who are truly here to serve their country. Again, I'm not claiming perfection or pure-heartedness for anyone. So I'm not a naive person. But I am here to uplift character when I see it and honor it and applaud it, support it, wherever it is. So as much as there comes a time when we have to name tyranny, even more so, we're called upon to uplift character when we see it. And if any of you saw, actually it happened several times over, some of those people, it was just heart moving. And it does seem like, well, as it said, sometimes things have to get worse before they get better. So sometimes what is wrong has to get so exaggerated that you just can't miss it. And then when you look at what's right and what's true, it's like, wow, the distinction, the contrast is just so remarkable. I think we're living in that kind of time. give you another couple of cliches, I suppose. You know, sometimes you have to puncture the boil to let out the toxicity. And another cliche or saying is, you know, the darkest time is just before dawn. So this is a dark time. There's something very dark, and yet we're here just before dawn. So I'd like to celebrate freedom over tyranny with a favorite song of mine. The tune is from St. Matthew's Passion by Bach, of course, from Bach, but it's sung by Peter, Paul, and Mary at the Newport News Festival with new lyrics. And it's because all men are brothers. And it is about facing tyranny, and it is about freedom. So let's share that now.
Because all men are brothers, wherever men may be, one union shall unite us forever, proud and free. No tyrant shall defeat us, no nation strike us down. All men who toil shall greet us, the whole wide world around. My brothers are all others, forever hand in hand. Where chimes the bells of freedom, there is my native land. My brothers are all others, yellow, white, and brown. My brothers' tears are my tears, the whole wide world around.
Let every voice be thunder, let every heart be strong, until all tyrants perish, our work shall not be done. Let not our memories fail us, the lost years shall be found. Let slavery's chains be broken, the whole wide world around.
Well, thanks for sharing that with me. Of course, many of you know that Peter Yarrow came here to Sunrise several times for the Arise Festival and sang with us, led us in song. And how beautiful the three of them were, and what a beautiful song. Can't leave the topic of tyranny and freedom without making reference to Jesus's illumined teaching on freedom. And maybe you want to say it with me. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The truth shall make you free. So knowing the truth, being in truth, honoring truth, serving truth, makes one free. The truth is empowering. It's freeing. And the tyranny is ultimately by the human mind, the human intellect, and the errant human heart that has lost track of the truth and that is self-serving. Self-serving, serving oneself, and then trying to get the rest of the world to serve oneself. That's a recipe for slavery and a recipe for tyranny. So we're here to know the truth and truth certainly has suffered in this era. It has suffered. And so we're here to know the truth and to bring the truth. I gave a talk at a service on I think I entitled it, What is Truth? Pretty proud of that talk because it spoke to all the levels of truth that are all in play and all important. The truth makes us free. In this last part of what we're doing, we'd like to address this. What is your vision for the future for America? What is your vision for the future of America? How do we think of America? Is it a static thing or an evolving thing, an evolving reality? If you think of it as a static thing, then we're always trying to be true to some prior reality, or we're rejecting America because the prior reality of America has been found to be failing. But if we understand that it's a part of the evolution of humanity, the evolution of consciousness, and that we're part of that larger story as America, and we have a vital part to play in that larger story. For any who don't know, Uranda was a huge patriot and was so grateful that America was here and created a home for the work he was doing, the work we're doing. And he saw it of great significance in the world. So if we think of America as evolving, what is the dream of its evolution? What are we becoming? Understanding, as I say, that we're part of the larger story of humankind. But when we touch into America herself, us as a people, us as a nation, we can't just rely on the things out of our past. We have to be visionaries, dreamers, who prophesy the future of our country. You know, I feel in these days, as dark as they are, a window opening to our future, feeling that, yes, there is a bridge over troubled waters to our future. And I feel it opening up, and I feel it opening for America. So we're here to pray over America, to prophesy over America, to bring our dream for America into this space in our remaining time. And I'd like to do this just as a whole group share, so we won't put it in the chat. And I ask you to keep it short, though, like you were perhaps writing in the chat, so that others have a chance to share. And we'll just do our best not to trip over each other, all right? So our dream for the future of America.
Well, I would hope, David, that we would once again be a beacon of light to the world, a model of integrity, and that our leaders might be men of the highest qualities of character. As I think you mentioned, I don't think Joe Biden is perhaps a perfect man. Not one of us would be perfect. And yet, he's a man of some integrity, and I would hope that we would support, reinforce, celebrate any expression of integrity, of nobility, of dignity that we see in him and the other leaders that he's gathered around him.
Well, that's beautiful, Jerry. I mean, I was kind of thinking along the same lines, like we're just a country of citizens that mentor and live the integrity of, I guess we could say, Christ consciousness. So we all have an understanding of what that is, but that's my dream, that we all wake up that much.
My dream is that there is deep communion and communication at all levels, welcoming the unique differences and the unique colorfulness of all the people of this country.
Just before service began here this evening, and probably going on now still, the members of the Senate were speaking, each one in turn, and just the nobility, the grandness of what they were expressing gives me great hope.
Part of my vision for this country is that our love and respect for this planet and for all the people on this planet rise again, and that we are a lighthouse of example of how to be thankful for our resources and the people who are also our resources, and that money does not have the same power as love.
I hope that switching from Trump to Biden means a return to truth and trust in science and reason. I guess I'm encouraged by our country's movement from religion to spirituality.
Yeah, I want to echo that, Patrick. So what I say is that even as the founders of this country came together in a period of enlightenment with a respect, profound respect for natural science, and as they came together believing in providence that they shared in common, but not defined by a single religion. So my dream is that we find a real and true common spirituality that is not based in religious denomination, but it's based in a universal awareness of reality, a universal awareness of providence, of the divine, of the creator, not as a matter of belief, but as a matter of knowing. And that coming into that shared awareness of the creator, that we come into a shared awareness of our unity, that we are one people here in America, one nation, and in fact, part of one people around the world.
David, it's interesting that among dictators, as you analyze their speech, it's an I fixation, a much higher use of the word I. My longing is that we are transformed from the I of self-obsession and materialism to the I above the pyramid, the one that stands for who we are, and that our language have a much more we fixation than I.
Thanks, Tom, that's beautiful. The way that my mind is thinking about this, it feels really simple, but it feels really true to me. And it's just to let love rule, let sovereign love rule inside of each and every one of us. And I feel like when that happens, there's like a drum beat or a pulse that begins to vibrate in the world that becomes the thing that I and we collectively joyfully move to. And there's a synchronous to it and a deliciousness that gets evoked back into life's experience again.
I can vision that we continue to grow and care for each other in our world, letting go of greed, and be a beacon of light that invites the whole world to this heart home of attunement.
My dream would be compassionate connection with all beings, and that includes Gaia.
I like to see us fulfill the last line of the Pledge of Allegiance, freedom and justice for all.
I desire and dream of us coming together as a people so powerfully for the whole, for all of humanity, for the planet, for each other, that the role that money plays in our culture is displaced by our commitment to the highest good for all, for the planet, and for the fulfillment of the divine in the manifest.
That we go deeper than on the surface that divides us and makes us feel like we're different from one another, and plumb the depths of the beautiful beings that we are, where we can find harmony and unity and communion.
Thanks, Patricia. I'll follow up on that essence of beauty and seeing beautiful people. I my vision for America is that we as Americans remember how to see beauty and speak about it and be astonished by it. Sometimes I'm amazed by when a foreigner visits who really is enthralled by America, their astonishment at how beautiful and kind and friendly people are. I'd love for that same sort of astonishment.
Well, we're reaching the end of our time. So good to feel this shared heaven held for America through this time, to feel the reality of attunement that we're knowing ourselves, that we're sharing with our country. Jane, anything you'd like to say as we close here?
Thank you, David. I feel the current of what we spoke was spoken about on Sunday, and knowing this current of attunement is everything. And we have the chance to be in attunement, holding the entire world, knowing everything is craving resonance there. And the stronger our field is doing it together, the easier it is for all the things that were just visioned to manifest and be known. We know how this works because we're built for it. So thank you, David.
Thank you, Jane. I would like to end by confessing my love for my country. Most of you have probably never heard me do that. And we don't, most of us as Americans, well, at least Americans I know, aren't all about that. But when it comes right down to it, I really love this country. I really love this country. I love it, all it means to me. I love the opportunity that it gave my ancestors. I love the land. I love its heart. I love America. And I so passionately want the best for it. It means so much to me that this country does well, that we thrive, and that we evolve, that we fulfill the promise of America. Thank you all. Thank you for those of you who are not from America for being with us in, you know, a troubling time, if you will, and just holding us with love, holding this country with love with us. Good to be together in that. Thank you. Thank you. And good night.
Thanks, David. Good night, everybody. God bless America.
Thank you. God bless.
God bless us all.
God bless you.
America, the world, the universe.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Love you guys.